Greg Ellam joins us. Very good morning to you. The Chancellor yesterday talked about an economic emergency which has only just begun. He couldn't have painted a blacker picture, really. Well, I suppose he could have done, but it was pretty black, wasn't it? 11.3% fall in GDP, unemployment at 7.5%. I mean, I suppose the question is, first of all, is this level of borrowing sustainable?
I'd say it is at this moment in time. We have to remember that countries around the world, particularly the Western world, are borrowing at record low rates and in many cases negative rates. So at least for now, for the next few years at least, it is sustainable. But obviously it has to be structured in a way that makes it so. I think the question is just what the cost is of not doing this compared to what the cost is of doing it. And that's always obviously going to be a difficult comparison, because then you're going back into forecast territory, which is obviously extremely difficult to do. I think ultimately, when you're seeing the amount of support which is being put in place and still an unemployment rate of 7.5% at the end of it, it has to just be viewed as essential, and the bill will just have to be made up later on. There's countries with far higher debt loads. The idea that the UK could have around 97% of GDP as debt 5 years from now, you compare that to somewhere like Italy, where prior to the crisis it was 142%, Japan, where it was much higher again. And that evidence suggests that it is more than tolerable, and that you could even tolerate a little bit more if need be. That's not to say that the Chancellor should be spending a lot more money, but should we need to spend more, then that would suggest that the markets do view it as perfectly tolerable. And Japan is one of those countries that borrows negatively. So it's definitely sustainable, and more so, it's completely essential at this point.
Given that public debt appears to have a life of its own and magic money trees and all the rest of it, the worry is, as far as I see it, is that today's politicians are not going to have to worry about the effects of this. In fact, it will be future generations that will have to take all this and fix it, won't they? I mean, that I think is one of the biggest worries. This, I know it's a dreadful phrase, but today's politicians have very little skin in the game as far as it's concerned. And add to that the fact that the majority of them, whom we elected or who were elected by our democratic process last year, actually came on to deal with Brexit. Nothing to do with this at all.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the it's one of the reasons why we're already talking about how it's going to be paid for, and the prospect that we may see tax increases as soon as 2022 in order to try and start footing the bill. But I mean, that's going to have only a small impact when you're increasing debt by 19% of GDP in 1 year. Marginal increases in taxation is not going to pay for it. This is going to be a very long-term bill which is going to have to be paid for. So yes, as you say, this is going to be later politicians who are going to be having to make the policy decisions that are going to be paying for it. But ultimately, if you're a politician, what would you rather be doing? Would you rather be fighting a global pandemic in the dark, or would you rather be would you rather be paying for the bill? I think I'd probably put myself firmly in the latter. I guess everyone has their own problems to deal with, and this is the difficulties that a pandemic throws up. There is no nice way out. There is no easy way out. Tough decisions have to be made. And as I say, when you're dealing with an unemployment rate after an increase in government spending to the level that we've seen, at an increase to the support schemes that we've just seen, and you're still dealing with an unemployment rate at 7.5%, it's difficult to argue that the debt levels is the more important of these parts.
And just as a side issue, but a big one, of course, the risk of a no-deal Brexit would only add to the problems, wouldn't it?
Yeah, of course. And we will judge the deal that the government gets at the end of it once all of the details of it are released. But I think the disruption caused by a no deal, when you've got to remember that this is businesses are now really on the brink. So many businesses at this point are very much on the brink. The last thing they need is another hit in terms of trade, or those that don't trade with the EU. The last thing they need is another hit as far as the impact that will therefore have on the economy. And therefore, I think Boris Johnson has always been anti-no deal, despite what he says in public. I think he's very much been a proponent of wanting to play a tough negotiation. I don't think he's ever been a strong advocate for a no deal Brexit, and therefore, it's never been something that I've seen as likely as maybe as many other people have. But I think now it's even more essential that a deal's done, because fighting a no-deal Brexit in the midst of a pandemic, I think, would have severe political consequences for Boris Johnson should he go down that road. And I think the economic consequences would be extremely challenging, shall I say, to say the least.
Here's a big subject for you, which I'd like you to deal with as briefly as you can, but I appreciate the difficulties. You have noted, haven't you, this huge increasing interest, once again, a spike of interest in Bitcoin. Now, the idea of Bitcoin is quite a good principle, because what it does is it creates a digital currency which is not dependent upon the whys and wherefores of central banks. We understand all that. But actually, it is now assumed a life of its own, hasn't it? Just explain it briefly, because we're hearing more and more about moves towards digital currencies, and we ought to beware this, oughtn't we?
We're hearing more and more about it, and there is going to be probably a move towards digital currencies. We're hearing central banks are laying the groundwork for it. Christine Lagarde from the ECB has previously talked about it very recently, in fact. But we know, obviously, the People's Bank of China was seeing the Russian Central Bank as well. But you can guarantee the Bank of England, the Federal Reserve, and others are also doing their part to see how that can be integrated into the financial system. Obviously, the difficulty with something like Bitcoin is that it's decentralized, and it's effectively trying to wrestle control away from these institutions. So it's always going to be facing that kind of uphill battle. But it's an exciting idea, and the technology is obviously still exciting. It feels like it's been around for a long time now. But as we've seen over the years, the size of the moves that it can generate in a very short period of time are extraordinary. And that makes it headline news. That makes it front page news in many cases. We saw back in 2017, people may remember Bitcoin mania. And what's happened now over the course of the last few months is that we've actually moved back towards those highs. We came within, I think, around $12 of that all-time high only earlier this week. It's pulled back slightly, and when I say it's pulled back slightly, it's pulled back almost $2,000, so it hasn't lost that kind of frenzy type of behavior. But I wouldn't be surprised if in no time whatsoever we're talking about record highs again, and that could potentially propel it higher, because one thing we've seen from Bitcoin in the past is the more it's in the news, the more kind of movement we do get. So I think it is going to get a lot more interesting once again. And again, this is a coin or an instrument that's just over a month ago was trading around $11,000. So again, more signs again that it really hasn't lost that ability to amaze and intrigue.
And is this something that investors finally should be looking at? I mean, private investors should be looking at.
Again, it's always a part of composition of any investment portfolio. I'd describe Bitcoin as, I mean, obviously, given what I've just said, highly, highly speculative. It's a huge gamble, and therefore, if you are using it as part of your portfolio and you are in a kind of low to medium risk portfolio, then it has to be an extremely small, very speculative branch, I guess. It's just more an instrument of intrigue. It feels more hobby at this point as far as investing goes, and highly speculative. It's just something for more for enjoyment, I think. And I think that's how many people, when they're investing in it, are viewing it, which is why unless you are really fully behind Bitcoin and you have a very volatile portfolio, it will remain for some time still a very small component. But the more interest it gets, and the more people that include it in their portfolios, obviously that's going to create wider interest and intrigue, and that typically in the past has increased the prices. So it's not something that's going anywhere anytime soon, but just in the same way that it moved from 11,000 to close to 20,000 in just over a month, you can't be surprised if it does exactly the same thing in the other direction. So I think anyone who's interested in looking at the Bitcoin space has to be fully aware that the price gains can be extraordinary, but the price drops can be very extraordinary and can happen far quicker than the rallies.
Craig Ellam, thank you very much indeed.
The Business Breakfast on Jazz FM with Owanda. Online trading, currency data, money transfers.